Hi everyone, I'm Lisa.
And I'm Nick.
And you're listening to It Takes Two, the podcast where two people take two movies with the same plot or premise and watch and discuss them.
More Christmas. Christmas coming at you, down the chimney, into your home. Can stop it. It's two movies based on Charles Dickens' The Christmas Carol.
Yay, we're back to A Christmas Carol, which is what we did for our first year of Christmas episodes.
So, it is 1983's Mickey's Christmas Carol, starring Mickey Mouse.
And Scrooge McDuck.
And Scrooge McDuck, and no Huey, Dewey, or Louie in this case.
I mean, they are there briefly.
Yeah, very briefly. The American animated 2009 Robert Zemeckis Christmas Carol, starring Jim Carrey as half the cast and Gary Oldman as the other half.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, this is interesting. So Mickey's Christmas Carol is one that I grew up with. You hadn't seen it before, right? No. Yeah, it's a lot shorter than I remember it being.
That's because you were a lot younger.
Yeah, when you were a child. Didn't realize how short my attention span must have been as a small child. But it's only 25 minutes long, which is not a feature film. But what can't it? We did The Grinch. We did have The Grinch Stole Christmas last year, and that also was like less than feature length.
And also, the other one starred Jim Carrey.
That's true.
Yeah.
So 2 years in a row, we're doing Jim Carrey Christmas movies.
Yeah.
Where he's the lead in a... He's a grumpy lead who hates Christmas. Maybe we should have compared The Grinch and Christmas Carol to Jim Carrey movies where he's a grumpy protagonist who hates Christmas in a 2000s adaptation of a classic Christmas book. So we've got Jim Carrey in this one as well. I've seen both these before. You hadn't seen either of them.
No.
Right? I've seen Mickey's Christmas Carol a lot. I saw it a lot of times as a kid. I think we used to watch it and Muppet Christmas Carol, and then I guess gradually it got phased out because the Muppet one was the favorite. Because I don't remember when the last time I saw Mickey's Christmas Carol was, but I'm sure it was when I was like 6 or 7.
My brain, when you said that, we used to watch it.
And no, not it.
My brain was like, the Stephen King horror movie miniseries?
Yeah, we used to watch that every year.
Yeah.
No, we used to watch two different adaptations of A Christmas Carol. But Muppet's Christmas Carol is one that we continue to watch and my family still watch, you know, together now. Whereas I literally don't remember last time I watched Mickey's Christmas Carol, but I suspect it was early enough that my younger brother either never watched it or wouldn't remember watching it.
Fair enough.
So it was interesting to revisit it after all these years, and it's very brief, and they cut out so much of it. Whereas the 2009 one is actually possibly even more accurate than the Muppet Christmas Carol, which people normally say is the most accurate, most book accurate version. But I think there's stuff in... Like, I think they were trying to be really faithful to the book in the Bob Zemeckis one.
Yeah.
So for people who haven't seen Robert Zemeckis A Christmas Carol, you might not have heard much about it, but you've probably heard about another film he did before it called The Polar Express. And how much that is just uncanny valley to the extreme, and I think this was following in its footsteps. He certainly had not worked out all the kinks of the creepy mocap animation that he was doing, but I think it's decent.
It's interesting watching it because the body movements, everything, even the head, right? So the mocap for it is done really well.
Yes, the facial expressions are not.
The facial expressions are creepy. The way the hands interact with faces is weird.
I think my big takeaway from it is after, obviously he did Polar Express before this, and having done Polar Express and all the complaints people had about it, I can 100% understand why he cast Jim Carrey in the lead role. Jim Carrey is an incredibly physical actor.
Yeah.
Like, even his facial expressions are so overdramatic that they were captured pretty well on this. Whereas Gary Oldman's facial expressions, you're like, what is happening with this character's face right now? Colin Firth. Actually, Gary Oldman's were kind of mediocre. Colin Firth is horrifying in this movie.
Yeah.
Because he's so subtle in his acting that it just does not happen in the mocap. So he's got, like, permanent fixed robot face while he's supposed to be, like, the jolly character, and it's very unsettling. It's, like, the most unsettling I've ever seen Colin Firth be. Not that he tries to be unsettling very much, but I don't think he was trying in this either. It's just his style of acting did not work with that kind of mocap. Whereas Jim Carrey, I get it. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. I look at it, I hear that they're putting Jim Carrey in a movie like this, and I'm like, I understand, without even looking at it, why you've chosen Jim Carrey for your mocap. You know?
It's, I don't think the message from Charles Dickens' novel really carries over.
To which one? Either?
No, I'm saying to now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
it does. All of the horrible CEOs
don't need get to visited by...
They need to get visited. That's what this is it. They None need to get visited care. By ghosts.
None of them would care.
I don't know. I was going to say something very topical. And then I remember this is a child-friendly episode. Yeah.
Some stuff happened recently.
Some stuff happened recently. And then I think
a very well-known billionaire then started using his child in a way that would be deemed irresponsible.
Other well-known billionaires have forgiven a lot of debt.
Yeah.
Because they have been visited by some ghosts.
Just one ghost.
And made to reconsider what they're doing. So
including
I think
the new CEO.
I think the message is coming through. I think Dickens was onto something. I think we need to scare
rich people.
Rich people who don't want to share, specifically rich people who don't want to share any of their money, need to have some frights put into them.
Yeah.
Because it works.
At least three frights
just
put in them.
I'm worried now because I forgot that we were doing a child-friendly episode, and I'm worried that I said something bad already, but I don't think I did. I think we're good.
Okay. No, it's very interesting, because obviously they're very different styles. You get the classic hand-animated versus the beginning of, not photorealistic, because I still don't think we're quite there.
I think that's what he was going for, though.
Yeah. It does have the Uncanny Valley issue with it, with the faces and the eyes. The lighting's really good. And I think the essence of the story is very much, like, honestly, out of all the, other than the Bill Murray movie.
Yeah, which is not child-friendly.
Yeah.
I think I did watch that as a child, though.
Scrooged? So, yeah. I think, other than the Bill Murray movie, I think, and this is something that is bringing a lot of acid reflux into my throat as I say it, I think the Muppets one is the best.
Oh, it is? Like,
not because
genuinely.
I don't like Muppets. It's just, it's silly in a fun way.
But it's also very accurate to the book.
Yeah,
I think
very accurate.
I think, I mean, maybe we'll revisit this in a few years and compare and rewatch some adaptations and compare Muppets vs. Carol specifically to the Jim Carrey one. I think they both are incredibly accurate to the book. I think the Bob Zemeckis one went out of its way to include some stuff that doesn't get included in any other adaptations.
Yeah.
But I think he kind of really leaned, I was going to say reimagined it, but I don't think he reimagined it. I think he really leaned into the horror of it.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of moments, and I think that's the big difference between it and, you know, the Muppets Christmas Carol, but also the Mickey one that we just watched, is that those are kind of lighthearted, and even where they do lean into the, you know, the kind of sadness of it, they don't make it horror. Even the Close to Christmas Future, he's a bit creepy in both of those.
Yeah.
You know, in the Scrooge McDuck one that we just watched, I think that and because we previously did Scrooged and The Muppet Christmas Carol, and I don't think either of them did this, but both the ones we watched this year did, which is the Ghost of Christmas Past. Ghost of Christmas Future, pushing him into the really deep grave with the fiery coffin at the beginning, at the bottom of it. Like, that's frightening. And they did do that in both of these. Like, Pete, as goes Chris the Future, pushes Scrooge McDuck down into it, and that's scary. But I felt like the Robert Zemeckis one really leans into the frightening parts of it, but without making it not suitable for children. You know, it's still, it's not a horror movie. It's still suitable for kids, but it's, I would, I don't know what the rating on it is, but I would be cautious about showing it to younger kids, because it's definitely, it gets pretty intense with the scary parts. It gets very scary.
I think the best, because it's Ghost of Christmas Future, mm-hmm. and I think the Jim Carrey version did a really good job, because it is basically just a shadow the entire time.
Yeah.
And it is very unnerving and unworldly, where you've got this sort of, was it a candle? And then yeah. a giant, and then just a shadow.
Yeah, and more importantly, it's his shadow.
Yeah.
It's not like just a shadow that shows up. Because they do a little bit of that shadow work in Mickey's Christmas Carol. Like, Marley shows up as a shadow initially, and he's just a shadow on the wall, separate to Scrooge.
It's not as intimidating, because it is played by Goofy.
Yeah, it's funny.
So, the fact that he falls down...
I made a note at one point that I was like, Goofy as Marley is a choice. Like, he's notoriously, like, the, you know... slightly dim-witted, good guy, nice, friendly guy. And then they cast him as, like, Scrooge's partner in crime who'd been, like, stealing from the poor or whatever.
Well, they're not... It's a very... So, he's an interesting character.
Scrooge or Marley?
Well, both of them together sort of in that relationship.
Yeah.
This is the thing that, like, why the Muppet Christmas Carol version is by far the most rounded and goes into the most detail, which is... interesting. Like, the Jim Carrey one does touch on it as a little bit, but not in depth as much.
Yeah.
You know, he was a loner at school. He met a really fantastic boss who basically bankrupted himself looking after his staff.
Yeah.
He fell in love. And I think the only thing missing out of the Muppet version is the song that's been cut out.
Mm.
But if you put the song back in where it's supposed to go,
yeah,
Chef's Kiss, brilliant movie. You see the sort of, like, the fact that, like, this is the thing that, like, gets you when you've watched this different variations yeah. of the same story as many times as we've have at this point. You never see any moments... with his family, any sort of positivity in his life, except for, like, one tiny error of his life.
Well, you do in the Bob Zemeckis one, because his sister comes to visit him at school. There's that moment, his sister comes to visit him, and she says, like, you can come home. Father is being much nicer than normal.
Yeah.
So you get to, just in, like, a moment... you get to learn, A, he has a little sister, which, I mean, makes sense, because he's got a nephew in all these adaptations. And the mother of the nephew is never mentioned, you know, his sibling is never mentioned. You're like, who is it, his sister or his brother? So he's got a sister, and she appears in the Bob Zemeckis version, and she, in, like, two lines of dialogue or something, reveals that he has an abusive father.
Yeah.
So he lives...
and in a boarding home.
Yeah, and but we know that he's in a boarding home, and, like, you know, we're not talking about it this time, but you keep referencing it anyways, but in the Muppet Christmas Carol, it's made very clear that Ebenezer Scrooge is the only kid who doesn't go home for the holidays.
Yeah.
That he stays in this boarding school throughout the holidays when everyone else has gone home to their families. So he doesn't spend the time with his family. And in this Robert Zemeckis one, you learn that, you know, something is going on at home, that his father is cruel to him and either doesn't let him come home, or it's so bad that he doesn't want to leave the boarding school where he's the loner and no one likes him anyway. You know what I mean?
That was what I was kind of getting at.
Right.
Because it's not, you don't see, the first time you ever see any positivity in his life is when he's an adult.
Yeah. When he's an apprentice.
Yeah, when he's an apprentice, and he's working for this person who bankrupts himself. He falls in love with a young woman, and then it's his obsession with money and this... Because they're, I wouldn't say loan sharks, they're like, What they're
they basically are they're
in the business.
They're lenders. Yeah. Because they're. I was gonna say are they mortgage brokers, but they're not exclusively, right? Because they've got loans. They do have more. They do deal with mortgages, as well as other loans. Yeah, so they're loan brokers. Is that a thing?
I don't think. And when his best friend / business partner passes away, he just becomes more disheveled and wouldn't say evil, but just like borderline unredeemable. Yeah. The way he treats the staff is like, oh, you know, I gave you a promotion last, you know, not a promotion, a pay rise last year of like 50 cents.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, that's a lot back in that day, but still.
Not based on the amount of money he's earning.
Because
it's not like he's doing any accounting.
Yeah, it's interesting because he also like in both these adaptations, I don't know, I guess I have read the book, but it's been a while. He only has one staff member, right? There's no one else. It's just him and Cratchit, and I guess that's also a you know money saving thing. But I think both of these kind of touch on him being afraid of spending money, and of being afraid of not having money. I think it, especially in the Robert Zemeckis one, like the conversation he has with the fiance, that ends the relationship, you know, because in both cases it's that he cares more about the money than her. In weirdly, the Disney one is worse for this, or it's because well, they're both these movies to Disney, but the Scrooge McDuck one is worse because he literally like forecloses her mortgage and is like, get out of here, you're poor.
Yeah.
Whereas in the Bob Zemeckis one, he kind of it's. Because she's saying, you know, you've changed and you're not the man that I fell in love with anymore. And it's a lovely performance by Robin Wright. But it's that they were poor together. And she's saying to him, like, I'm still poor. Yeah. And, like, if you met me now, you wouldn't be interested because you care so much about the money. But it's that he has spent, like, I think it's kind of implied that he started getting into this business to get money for them together, to live their lives together.
Yeah.
But his fear of not having money and his fear of going back to being poor is so all-encompassing that he forgets to live the life that he was saving for. Which is really sad. And it does, I mean, that happens. And it's like money is tough.
And it's not
as kids.
Yeah. That's, you know.
You'll learn this, children.
Yeah.
No, it's but it is, you know, it is hard when you have to work hard
to survive
and then you get enough money to survive on. It's very hard to turn that switch off.
Yeah.
And to say, I have money, I can spend it on this thing. I have money, I can spend it building this life that I wanted to build. And instead, like, he doesn't even have like a very stately home or whatever, you know. I mean, he has like a housekeeper in the Bob Zemeckis version. So he has enough money to pay a staff at his house as well. But it's very much that like he doesn't buy extravagances with this money. It's money that
he's holding it like a dragon.
Yeah, because he's so obsessed with getting money and keeping money that he's not actually using it to live. And he does say that at the end, like Jim Carrey's Scrooge says it near the end of the movie. He says, "You can't take it with you," you know, like because he's just had this flash of his own mortality and knows that he's going to die, and people are, you know, not going to care about it because of what a horrible person he's been. And also because he just hasn't been building connections with people. He hasn't been socializing. He had one friend and that, you know, he had a partner and he isolated himself from her. And then he had one friend and that friend died.
Yeah.
And this is a very lonely man who isn't letting himself feel that loneliness because he's in this anxiety.
It shows very, very heavily with obviously Bob Cratchit, but also with his nephew, because his nephew was literally coming with an olive branch and being like, hey, you know, come, you know, you don't have to do anything.
Yeah.
Come over to my house, meet my fiance. But he's like, why would I care? You're poor. Like, what are you doing with your life? You got to hoard all the wealth like a dragon.
Yeah.
and everyone will be afraid of you rather than, like, in awe of you, because you don't actually help with your money, you just hoard it all. And it's not until the second ghost comes along, the ghost of Christmas present, where he's taken and shown Bob Cratchit's family, and the struggles they're dealing with. And it's very interesting because I looked this up of what's wrong with Tiny Tim.
Yeah, and this is where the Muppets one is very accurate.
Yeah. So
no one else mentions what's actually wrong with him.
Because it's, what do you remember what it is? It was mentioned in the Muppets version.
It's in the Muppets version, because the thing is that in the book they don't say what it is, and in no version they say what it is, but in the Muppets version I believe they give him signs of tuberculosis?
Right.
Is that right?
I don't remember.
I think it's, I can't remember, I feel like tuberculosis made sense.
Either that or you've been watching too much.
John Green?
Yeah. Everything is tuberculosis. So what I did some research on is there's two possible, but the most likely is rickets.
Right, okay. Maybe that's what they did. They definitely, I think when they made the Muppets version, they really researched into what the illnesses of the time were.
Yeah.
And made, just gave him symptoms of what was the most likely illness of the time. So maybe it was rickets.
Yeah. There's something else which was related to kidney function.
Right.
Yeah, so there's two possibilities, both of which would have been around and heavily affecting children of that era when the book was written. So it's either possibility. No one's really, like, nailed it.
And I think, you know, it's important to note that it's whatever is wrong with him is something that can be improved.
Yes.
Because in the version where they, you know, in the Ghost of Christmas Future version of events where Scrooge continues the way he is and Cratchit keeps living, you know,
poorly
on a penny, Tiny Tim does pass away.
Yeah. So it's probably something to do with nutrition.
And he, warmth, like being in cold, damp spaces, you know, something that's really impacted by that. Because then in, obviously, the version where Scrooge actually helps and gives them money and gives them, you know, things for their home that can help them, suddenly Tiny Tim gets to actually live. You know, and that's, and maybe that's why my brain is going to tuberculosis, because that's how the world is at the moment.
Yeah.
That tuberculosis, I know it's a hard word for the children listening. you might have, if you've heard of it at all, you might have heard it as TB. People sometimes shorten it just TB. It's a sickness that used to be really common everywhere. And lots of people died of it a long time ago. And now we have cures and treatments, and it's really easy to treat. And it's not even very expensive to treat, but there's parts of the world that are really poor, and they don't have the treatment. So there's some really wonderful people working to, like, actually get that treatment to the people who need it in those parts of the world. You know, so it's getting better, but... definitely, you know, that's reminiscent of the Tiny Tim thing for me, that, like, if he had the treatments, he can get better. But because of his situation and because of the lack of wealth, he doesn't have that opportunity in the original version. And that's sad. But he can be saved, and so can all of the, you know, people who currently have tuberculosis. Anyway. There's no call to action there. Ask your parents about it.
Ask your parents about tuberculosis. Ask your parents today. About it.
There's an organization called Partners in Health. if you want to help a kid this Christmas,
I am not.
I am not.
What is happening?
Hi everyone. I'm Joan Green.
Yeah.
Everything is tuberculosis. Anyway.
The title of his new book.
It genuinely is the title of his new book, and I will buy it. Because I want to read. Because I think he's written about a guy he actually knows who had tuberculosis and got treatment because of, the, you know, people going over and helping. And is now, you know, someone who, like Tiny Tim, could have died quite young and has actually survived to adulthood instead. Anyway, we're not here to talk about tuberculosis today. But, yeah, I feel like they don't show a lot of the Tiny Tim stuff in the Scrooge McDuck version. In Mickey's Christmas Carol, it's brief.
Very short.
But what they do in Mickey's Christmas Carol, which I appreciate, because they don't say it in the other one, and I don't think they say it anywhere else, is they explain why they go to those places. The Ghost of Christmas Present.
Yeah.
Because I feel like in the other versions of the scene, and definitely in the Robert Zemeckis one, they just go. They're just like, let's go here. And he's like, why are we here? Whereas in Mickey's Christmas Carol, I can't remember the exact line, but the Ghost of Christmas Present says something about, like, you know, the people who care for... Oh, yeah, because Scrooge is saying, you know, why should I show kindness? Anyone who's ever shown me kindness, no one's ever shown me kindness. And he's like, well, you haven't given them the opportunity to. And he's like, yeah, like, who would want to? And he's like, where he says something like, you know, who has kindness in their heart for me? Or something like that. Like, and Scrooge, and that's actually quite a telling line, that Scrooge doesn't feel like anyone cares about him. And he uses that as an excuse to not care about anyone else.
Yeah.
But he obviously is feeling hurt. And that's probably from, you know, I think Ebenezer Scrooge has anxiety. I'm diagnosing him. I think Ebenezer Scrooge has anxiety, and he doesn't like himself, and as a result, he, like, isolates himself from people, and then when he does that, he's like, they don't like me. That's why I've been isolated. But that's what the Ghost of Christmas Present is showing him, is that he's showing him people who do have kindness in their heart for Scrooge, for people who do have a good thing to say about Scrooge. And then weirdly, they don't actually do it in that version, because, you know, Mickey Mouse as Bob Cratchit doesn't say it, and then they don't go to see Fred. But in the Bob Zemeckis version, you know, Mickey Mouse, oh no, not Mickey Mouse, Bob Cratchit, there's no Mickey Mouse in the Bob Zemeckis version. When they go to see Gary Oldman's Bob Cratchit, and Gary Oldman as Tiny Tim, which is still weirds me out, you know, he does a toast to the founder of the feast, to Mr. Scrooge. He's saying, we can't, like, I know we're living on a small amount. And he's got so many kids in this version. There's so many Cratchit children. But he's saying that, you know, we can only afford this small goose between our family. We can't afford a big turkey. We probably never will afford a turkey. Maybe someday in the future. But we have food. We have a house, and we have food, and the reason we have these things is because I have an employer, Mr. Scrooge, and he has paid for these by giving me wages.
Yeah.
And he is genuinely grateful, and he genuinely feels love in his heart for Scrooge.
Yeah, yeah.
And his wife is having none of it, but he still convinces her to, let's do a toast to Mr. Scrooge. And then you have Fred's dinner, where they're playing the, you know, the guess who kind of game, where they're talking about an unwanted creature. And it's, oh, it's your Uncle Scrooge. And Scrooge is, again, he recoils in on himself. And you can see him. And, like, the whole way through it, you can tell that he knows. Because I think, you know, looking back at the Muppet version, because I can't compare this to Mickey's Christmas Carol, because they don't even go see Fred. In the Muppet version, he's like, oh, he's trying to guess. He's like, oh, a rat, a cat, you know. Mm. Whereas in this one, you can tell instantly from Jim Carrey's body language that his version of Scrooge knows that what they're talking about is him.
Yeah.
And he assumes it, because that's how he feels about himself. And he's, like, recoiling in and trying to get away and trying to look away. And then they say it. And then Fred is like, but as much as we joke, you know, I do wish my uncle well, and I hope that he's having, you know, even though he wouldn't want me to wish him a Merry Christmas, I hope he has one, and, you know, he's really genuine about it, which is why, you know, Scrooge at the end of the movie comes to the dinner. That's what he chooses to do, is to go actually take up Fred's, and he does this in both of these versions, to take up Fred's offer and be like, actually, I will come to your dinner. And in the Scrooge McDuck version, in Mickey's Christmas Carol, he just sees Fred on the street and is like, I'm gonna come to dinner. And Fred is like, oh my god, great, like, come along. Whereas in, you know, the Bob Zemeckis Christmas Carol, he just shows up. And he shows up at that moment where they're playing the game and they're about to guess that it's him. And then, you know, and you can see him being anxious.
Yeah.
When they all kind of look at him silently when he says he's there and he hopes that he'll let them join his dinner. But then they all, like, they're overjoyed that he's actually come and they all, you know, rush over to hug him and stuff. And it's very much that the Ghost of Christmas Present was showing him the people who care about him. And he's saying, like, look at this and listen to what they have to say. You're not in the room and they only, you know, they are saying positive things about you. And yes, there is mention of you being a miser because that's who you are. But they still, despite that, they still care about you and they still want you around. Yeah, I can't remember how we got onto that. but that is what he's doing, is like he's actually saying, let's go see the people who care about you. And that's how he ends up seeing them and their families as well, and realizing that, like, there is space for him with these people and with their families, and that they have all this love, and that even, you know, because he doesn't believe in doing stuff for the sake of love, because he's been burned before in his own mind when he was the one who actually did it. So for him to see people who he sees as having poor, as being poor and not having enough money to look after themselves, whatever, he sees them with their family, with their friends, with their wives, having a joyous time on less money than he has.
Yeah.
He kind of goes, oh, this is what I've been missing.
Yeah, that's the realization. And the problem is that these days, even if you don't give out your money because you have money, means that you're known, everyone's Googleable. Mm. And I think that's where the lesson of the story has not really moved into this kind of era of our time, which is sad, because it really shows how people who have been affected by greed are expressing their feelings now, which is not a constructive manner, and I do not agree with the actions taken, but at the same time, it's the only way people are going to change, is if they get visited by ghosts.
Mm.
And show in the error of their ways in a time frame where they can actually do something about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this story, this novel that's been adapted so many times by so different things in so many different ways, you know, there's screen versions, there's TV movies, there's episodes of television shows, there's literally everything under the sun. It's sort of like that's... We've really... Christmas for me, and the reason why I've never been such a huge Christmas person, I just feel like it's contaminated.
Mm.
Christmas to me is family. But the problem is it's not about family. It's about consumerism and consumption and not the illness, the
unless you're Tiny Tim.
Yeah, unless you're...
Consumption was just another name for tuberculosis, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Because it eats you from the inside.
Yeah. Scary.
Yeah. And I think that's the biggest issue, and I think that's really... It's not so much in Christmas Carol, because, like you said in the beginning, he's not spending it on himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's not there with a gold-plated chariot with thoroughbred Arabian horses that he's imported. You know, he must be also cold.
Yeah.
You know,
because he's skimping on buying coal.
Yeah.
Like, he sees it as an unnecessary expense to buy coal.
Yeah. To warm your office enough that your ink defrosts so the person who's doing all the work can actually do their job.
Yeah.
It's a very bizarre way, and I think, you know, everything you've touched on earlier kind of really, like, puts him in this little box. And I just, yeah, it really shows, because that's the difference between, obviously, this sort of when the story was written versus, well, like, you know, it's hard to say. I know people are out there doing good, but
mm-hmm.
It does definitely feel like wealth is now used as a status symbol to show excess than it is to help.
Yeah.
When people do things and purchase things for the purposes of changing them for the worse to make themselves look better than actually helping with it, really shows kind of like the era we're in, the attitude of people, and the fact that people are obsessed and are fans of these people and the things they do. It's very bizarre because it is just, it makes me recoil and honestly lose a little bit of hope. And then honestly, as a person who grew up in the era that I did and how, you know, where we are as millennials, it's not great, guys. Like, I, you know, being traumatized is just like a normal everyday thing for us, for our generation. We've lived through it all, you know, and I'm not saying that it's as bad as the generation who would have been children during the wars or been in, because, you know, this is not just a Western, obviously I have a Western point of view because I am from the West, but, like, there are other countries out there that are, what?
New Zealand is not West. I mean, I understand what you mean, the concept of the Western world, but, like,
yeah. English-speaking countries. Sorry, you derailed my train.
Sorry.
There are people out there now suffering. Continuously. And it is the influence on the West, on these places, by giving these people the ability to do stuff, or standing in the way of it ending, that is, you know, there are things ongoing, you know, the, you know, they're talking about, because this is obviously set prior to World War One, you know, even in the trenches of no man's land, ask your parents before looking this up, one kids, looking this one up, kids. You know, even they stop for Christmas. But, you know, you look at what's happening in the Middle East, you look at what's happening in Africa, you know, there is no Christmas there. You know, there's just one fight after the other. And you sort of, it puts a whole thing in perspective of just like, there are people out there who have billions of dollars who could help cure things like tuberculosis.
Yeah.
Stop malaria, things like that. And then at the same time, no, they just buy companies that don't need to be bought to make themselves look better. They invest in social media. They buy things so they can't be used against them in some sort of, the only thing I can come off with is the joke about becoming a dragon and hoarding all the wealth and living in a mountain. Because it does feel like that for the people on the outside. And we're blessed. In reality, me and you, for an example, we're blessed.
Yeah.
We earn more than we need.
Mm-hmm.
We live outside of our means. Well, we don't live outside of our means. We live within our means, but our means are large enough to sustain our lifestyle in a way where we can do things that I could never do as a child.
Yep.
You know, my parents didn't own a home. Here we are.
Yeah.
You know, no, yeah, we're renting it off the bank, but still, like, it is on paper ours.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I grew up in a home that my parents did own.
Yeah.
But they only finished paying off mortgages, like, last year.
Yeah.
You know? And also, I didn't realize, but when I was having a conversation with my mother recently, is that, like, our TV as a kid was rented.
Yeah.
You know? And stuff that I took for granted as a child, I didn't realize was, like, that we, you know, I had no, you know, understanding of debt and loans, despite watching a lot of Muppet Christmas Carol. I didn't, you know, it never struck me that that's what, you know, my life was built on. And the fact that we own the stuff in our apartment.
Yeah.
Like, none of that is rented.
Yeah, other than our mortgage, we have no debt.
We don't have any debt. Yeah. And that is such a privileged place to be in.
Yeah.
And we're not wealthy.
No.
I wouldn't consider us wealthy. But
that's based on the fact that we can see, because of social media, because of television, because of the media in general, we are showing examples of other people.
It's also because we know we have to work to continue to live. And I think if we were wealthy, we would be spending some of that on charity. Because I think that's the kind of people that we are. I mean, I do, but like once a year I donate to charity. You know, it's not regular.
And it's also time is far more important. That's the other big issue with that. Is you could be, you know, if you're earning so much money, it's because you're doing something and you're working hard.
Yeah.
Or you own something that is always, because of the way the economy is now, always on the precipice of collapsing anyway.
Yeah. And we're also, you know, we've come from positions where we have had to, where we haven't been able to live the way that we're living now. Point that, like, you know, we put aside money to save, to do something.
Yeah.
And then we both feel anxious when we actually have to spend that money to do it. So, you know, we still haven't replaced our dryer after 3 years. But, you know, we're going on a holiday next year. And we've literally saved up for, you know, 2.5 years or whatever to go on this holiday.
Yeah.
But we still both felt anxious trying to spend the money to book it.
Yeah.
And if we were wealthy, we wouldn't have that. You know, that wouldn't be a part of our consciousness.
And it's definitely where you can, winding back, and let us, bear with us, folks, but winding back to where the movie's point is, it's very much like how Scrooge's mentality is.
Yeah.
He came doesn't
from a place where he didn't have money, and he's worked, and he's afraid to spend it.
Yeah. And it is very, very telling. It's very telling. Obviously, we... From what I experienced with your family, you have had limited experience with mine, because mine's a little bit rougher than yours. Christmas is about family.
Yeah.
And it's not about, oh, you didn't get me the brand new whatever BMW, you know, or Gucci bag, or I don't even know
brands. I mean, I will say that I did hear a lot as a child that Santa doesn't bring monkeys, because I really wanted a pet monkey. And I mean, there was a part of me that thought that Santa could just solve all my problems as a child.
Yeah.
And my parents had to be like, listen, just be realistic with him, you know, he's a...
I do like
that. He can only bring you a limited amount of things.
Yeah. Like the whole dress story.
What, the Santa got me a dress and I was like, I didn't ask for this.
Yeah. Just like, and how much work your parents had gone through to
We used to make, and I mean, I think it's, you know, how my parents grew up, but we used to, when we made lists for Santa, it would be like, you know, we had an amount of things that we might ask for, and then we just put, and a small surprise. And a small surprise, Santa. And I guess that's what that dress was. And then, yeah. I wore it eventually. I just was like, it's not what I expected.
Yeah, to travel surprise. Two towns over to find it, and... Santa.
I don't know where Santa got that dress.
Anyway... Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Is that it? You're just going to end there?
It's summer here.
You want to do trivia?
Yeah, you get into it, because I'm sweating up a storm here.
I haven't gotten a lot, but I'll do the Mickey's Christmas Carol first. So, originally the guy that they got to play Scrooge McDuck, Alan Young, he wasn't considered for it. So, Mickey's Christmas Carol was actually based on... a record that Disney put out about A Christmas Carol, and this guy had narrated it, but they didn't want to ask him to play Scrooge because they thought that he wouldn't agree to do a voice for an animated film. They thought it was beneath him. And then he found out about it because one of his friends was preparing to audition for Scrooge McDuck, and he contacted him and be like, hey, I want to audition. And they were like, oh. And he was like, listen, I worked in television for 5 years with a talking horse. At this point in my career, nothing is beneath me. And he ended up... Getting the role of Scrooge McDuck and then voicing Scrooge McDuck for the rest of his life.
Fair enough.
This is the last film that Clarence Nash did the voice of Donald Duck for. He was the original Donald Duck, and he sadly passed away shortly after this film came out. And it was the first film that Wayne Allwine did the voice of Mickey Mouse. It was the first film with a new Mickey Mouse, which is interesting because the Muppet Christmas Carol is the first time Kermit was voiced by someone other than Jim Henson.
Right.
So that's interesting. In the book, Scrooge's nephew Fred is married, but this is the only version of A Christmas Carol where he's not married, which presumably was done because they cast Daisy Duck as Scrooge's love interest when she's normally Donald's wife. And also, I just thought this was a nice fact. So the director, Bernie Madison, had started working at Disney in 1953 in the mail department. So he started off working in the mail department, and then, you know, within 30 years, he was directing films. That's cute. For the Robert Zemeckis one, apparently Robert Zemeckis has always wanted to make an adaptation of A Christmas Carol, A, because he doesn't think that any other adaptations have really gotten to what he believes is the heart of Charles Dickens's interpretation of it. He thinks it was very visual novel, and that Charles Dickens almost made it like it was to be a movie despite not knowing that movies existed.
Right.
He didn't specify what it was that he thought, but based on watching it, I think he wanted to lean into the horror of it. So Bob Cratchit in this film is very short, which apparently is how he was described in the book. So it's interesting that he's not in a lot of other adaptations. I would argue that he is when he's played by Kermit the Frog. And this one is almost completely true to the novel. So the book spends a lot more time in the present, especially at the houses of Bob Cratchit and his nephew Fred. But it also shows strife around the globe, in caves, on ships, that is relieved by Christmas joy. And then the future scene with the horse coming alive and chasing Scrooge is not in the book. About the only thing they had lived. And also that the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come basically doesn't move except pointing his finger, which is more accurate in the Muppet one than this one, I think. And then the rest of my trivia is all based around the budget and box office of this movie. So I'm going to just read, rather than tell you the budget and the box office straight off the bat, I'm going to read these three bits of trivia. So one, the film opened at number one in 3,683 theaters, and it grossed $30.1 million in its opening weekend with an average of $8,000 per theater. In the United Kingdom, it topped the box office on two different occasions, first when it first opened, and then 5 weeks later, it leapfrogged box office chart toppers of 2012. Box office chart toppers 2012, the movie. The Twilight Saga, New Moon, Paranormal Activity, and also another family Christmas movie called Nativity. So you would think, based on all those, that it did really well. But because of how high the production and marketing costs it lost the studio $100 million.
Wow.
And the president of the Walt Disney Studios Motion Pictures Group at the time, Mark Zarate, and the head of worldwide marketing had to resign as a result of this movie. Yeah. So the budget was $200 million and the box office was $325 million. So they did incredibly well in theaters, but they had cost so much money to begin with that literally it cost the studio a bunch of money, and the guy had to resign. Isn't that nuts?
Yeah, it is.
That's just crazy. I guess that's all there is to talk about. I would recommend children listening to this, if you're still listening, get the book. Get your parents to read A Christmas Carol, the book, to you.
Yeah.
It's a very good little book. You can get some that have got nice pictures in it. I read it myself, I think, when I was 10, maybe. So that might be the reading level of it. But then again, I was just really into Charles Dickens at that time. I also read Great Expectations when I was like 11. So I don't know if that's every child's interest.
Yeah, see, I was a different child. I really liked Kidnapped and The Hobbit.
Yeah, I really liked The Hobbit. Yeah. I got The Hobbit. I think I got The Hobbit for Christmas when I was 10. And also, there is a book called Letters from Father Christmas that is by J.R.R. Tolkien. That is a nice read, but maybe for older kids, for fair reasons. So, yeah.
Thank you for joining us. If this is your first time, please go back through our catalogue and enjoy either just the Christmas episodes or some other things. You may see a movie pop up there or there, here or there that appeals to you. And if you're a long-time listener, thank you for joining us for these lovely Christmas episodes, and we will catch you in the new year.
Yeah. I think this is going to be out after Christmas, so I hope you had a good Christmas, and have a good new year.
Bye.
Bye.